All right, fantasy baseball fans, it's getting real. It's time for the position previews. We start with catchers on Monday, February 9th. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White and Al Melchior. We'll be with you all season talking fantasy baseball, and we've got every position to break down. And we're going to start with the catchers, the lamest, stupidest position in fantasy baseball, guys.
Certainly this year.
Hey, we didn't have catchers. The ball would just keep rolling back to the screen.
That's true. They're not great hitters, though.
No, they have been. I feel like there was kind of this rebirth going on at the catcher position for a couple years there. You know, it used to be just the Mauer and Victor Martinez position, and then we started to get some other names. But this year, man, it's like all those catchers who broke through 2 years ago just went back from whence they came, and now you can't have any confidence in any of them.
Well, what we're going to do now, going forward, at least until we finish all the positions, is do a couple of position previews every week, maybe more, and a mailbag show later in the week. So if you want to email us, we'll read it on the mailbag show at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I do have one catcher email to get to later today, but fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Also, go to the website, fantasynews.cbssports.com, and watch our videos. We're going to talk about the differences between one catcher leagues and two catcher leagues, how it went down in our Roto League, and what value we liked. And we'll just kind of talk about some guys that are very relevant this year. We will also get to some news and notes before we get into catchers. Let's do that right now. So big news over the weekend. San Diego signed James Shields. That was actually this morning. San Diego signing James Shields to a 4-year deal worth $75 million. I saw on ESPN.com, per baseballreference.com, that Shields has pitched the most innings in baseball since 2007. He was number 14 in points last year, number 25 in Roto. What do you think about James Shields, the Padre, fellas?
I think it's pretty much status quo. I think some people might get excited about the fact that he's going to Petco, and I think that's probably a net gain for him. Someone on Twitter, and unfortunately I don't remember who, asked me a question about the impact of the outfield defense, which might not be very good in that big park. So that's a potential negative. And, you know, I'm not sure what the catching situation is going to do for Shields and for the rest of the staff. But Rene Rivera's one of the game's best framers. He's gone and in Tampa Bay now. So I think when you just put it all together, it's still James Shields.
And James Shields is 22nd for Scott. He's about 35th for Al in both formats. So I know people might look at his postseason performance and think, you know, all the innings are going to catch up to him. It's valid, but just looking at his previous postseason performances before this past season, he's been a pretty awful playoff pitcher throughout most of his career, for whatever that's worth, and it hasn't really mattered the next year.
They're joking during the playoffs this year that the Big Game James moniker didn't really apply, so that doesn't surprise me. But Shields always gets it done in fantasy. I understand the difference between head-to-head and Roto because the whip is kind of on the high side for today's game, but he pitches so many innings that he ends up in head-to-head, he ends up a borderline ace, and in Roto leagues, it's not like he's some scrub either. He's still, like, he was 24th last year or 25th last year. I think he can do that again.
Victor Martinez tore the meniscus in his left knee. This is bigger news. First year of a 4-year deal, no timetable for V-Mart's return. Where would you draft him if you were drafting right now? Where would you take Victor Martinez?
I think I'd still probably go third round, given that I was willing to take him in the second round. And I just don't expect that he's going to miss a whole lot of time. I do worry that maybe initially he won't be as potent offensively, but I think he's still worth the risk, like late third round.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd drop him just around with this. There's a couple different ways this injury could go, but the more likely scenario is that it's just it's going to sideline him for a few weeks as opposed to months. And so until that changes, unless that changes, I plan on drafting him in the third round. And we should know by the time we're actually drafting if it's going to be longer than that.
Freddie Freeman or Victor Martinez?
I'm going Victor Martinez still.
Me too.
And the San Francisco Chronicle reports that Sean Doolittle not expected to miss much time. He does have a slight tear in his rotator cuff, but a good report recently that he's not expected to miss much time. So where would you take Sean Doolittle? I think last time we spoke about it, Al, you said you had him as like a dollar guy or a $0 guy in an auction league.
Right, yeah. I think actually at that point I had him as a $0 guy, and Scott brought up the excellent point that I was not really factoring in the replacement value enough there. So, yeah, I could see going a couple bucks on Doolittle, and that doesn't really change much for me because I don't know, I've just seen it enough times with these reports that the expectations are optimistic, but then there's a setback. So I think until he's on the verge of coming back, I'm going to go with the safer options at closer.
So let's move on to catcher. Here we go. Stats to consider as we look at the – I just want to kind of put in perspective what having a great catcher might mean for your fantasy team. And based on last year, which is not exactly scientific, but Buster Posey was the best catcher in Roto. Jonathan Lucroy was the best catcher in points leagues. Posey was the number one catcher in Roto, and Lucroy was number two in that format. They ranked as the number 51 and the number 101 overall players, pitchers and hitters, in Roto. Meanwhile, in points leagues, Jonathan Lucroy scored 450.5 fantasy points, which is pretty high for a number one catcher, given what we've seen in recent years. And Lucroy and Posey, who was right behind, him, they scored about 100 fantasy points more than number three, Salvador Perez. So that is the huge gap, Scott, between Lucroy and Posey and the next best guy last year, Salvador Perez. Doesn't mean it's going to be the case this year, but you can make a case based on that to take those guys fairly early.
Yeah, well, that is the tier delineation for me, Posey and Lucroy. I actually have two catchers up there with them in the top tier. One is Devin Mesoraco, who actually outperformed Lucroy on a per-game basis last year, but he had some missed time to injury that put him down in the total fantasy points. And then the other is Evan Gattis, who going into a new situation in Houston figures to play a lot more, and he has the most power potential of any of these guys. So he's the one catcher I'm expecting 30-plus home runs from, and I think that'll be enough to make him in the same ballpark as Posey, Lucroy, and Mesoraco.
And hitters who scored more fantasy points than Jonathan Lucroy, who again was number one in points leagues at catcher. And this is why, I don't love taking catchers early. They're just not that good compared to other positions. 9 first basemen outscored Lucroy, 5 second basemen, 3 third basemen, no shortstops, and 15 outfielders. Al, you want to jump in?
Well, I hope you remember this when we talk about shortstops so that you can be even more.
I will. That's why you won't see me taking Tulowitzki in round one. And Jason Castro. See, the other thing I wanted to point out about catchers is that at bats tend to matter. Jason Castro was the only catcher that had 450 at bats or more and did not finish in the top 10 in points leagues. 8 of the top 10 catchers in points leagues had 450 at bats or more. 6 of the top 8 in Roto had 450 at bats or more.
Well, and that was actually the very thing that I wanted to address, because there's some interesting things going on with catchers and playing time. Scott mentioned Gattis probably not going to catch or catch much, so he should see a lot of playing time, whether it's left field, first base, or DH. Mesoraco could see a lot of playing time this year. Brian Price has said that he wants him to catch, if I remember correctly, I thought he said 145 games or something outrageous. It was a high number.
145 games, big man. You got it.
Yeah, and of course Perez did that last year, and or in that neighborhood. I think it was 141 actually. And with Perez this year, I have some concern about fatigue because there was all that and the postseason. But anyhow, so Mesoraco's going to catch a lot. Gattis is going to play a lot. Perez, you could expect, is going to catch a lot. Lucroy is now reportedly going to be the first base platoon option with Adam Lind. So when he's not catching, he's probably going to be playing first base. So Lucroy's going to get a lot of at-bats. So those players certainly have an edge.
Yeah, and I also wanted to touch on something else you said, Adam, about how catchers don't score as many points as other positions. And that's completely true, but you also pointed out the top two catchers last year were about 100 points better than the third catcher. And you don't – looking across all the positions, it's rare that you have – you can so easily get a 100-point advantage on your competition at a position. Usually it's like 10 points here, 20 points there. So There's other reasons to be scared of drafting catchers early, because the playing time can be unpredictable and they tend to be more susceptible to injuries. But I don't think it's as simple as saying, hey, they don't score as much as other positions, so I don't want them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lucroy hit 13 home runs and was the number one catcher. So Posey seems capable of putting up, you know, all-star first baseman type numbers. But you know what I'm saying? Like, even at their best, they're not hitting, like, great first baseman or great outfielders.
Right, but it's about... It certainly in head-to-head leagues, and maybe it's slightly different in rotisserie, but in rotisserie you get the other wrinkle of having to draft two catchers instead of one. But anyway, if we're just talking head-to-head here, it's about getting an advantage on your opponent, whoever your opponent may be in a given week. And if drafting an elite catcher allows you to get a 75 to 100-point advantage on 10 of the 12 teams you're going to play, then it's not such a bad idea. I'm not saying I'm thrilled with doing it myself, but I think there's certainly an argument to be made for it.
And then, you know, just to further that point, Posey and Lucroy, they're both right in their prime. They've both done it. Now, Lucroy's done it 2 years in a row. He's been great. So I feel like there's not really a lot of doubt about their performance. Is that safe to say? Like, if as long as they stay healthy, Lucroy and Posey are probably going to be very good.
Sure, yeah. I mean, Posey, actually, there's been some inconsistency with power, but, you know, when it's said and done, even if both drop off a little bit from last year, when I actually do expect that, I don't have big doubts about their ability to perform at their recent norms.
So give me a round that you're sitting there and they're still on the board and you'll be the one to take the catcher, to be the first player in your league to take a catcher.
I start thinking about it in round five. The first two mocks we've done, I haven't been the one to take him. And again, I want to be thrilled to take him because I just like playing it safe with the early picks, and I don't think any catcher is especially safe. But round five is when I'd start thinking about it personally.
And yeah, same here. So if I see Posey in round five, I'm thinking that's going to be a great value, but I expect that he's not going to be there round five in practically any draft that I'm in.
And Lucroy, same thing, round five?
Actually, a little bit later, and yeah, based on the mocks that we've done, I think that could be a realistic expectation to wait at least another round or two.
All right, then. Some questions about catcher before we look at the draft breakdown. Is this a deep or shallow position, fellas?
I think we've already touched on that. It's pretty shallow this year. Looking pretty yucky after the last 10 or so, I'd say.
After the first 10?
Yeah.
So you don't feel like in a 12-team mixed league where you only have one catcher, everyone's going to be happy with who they have?
Probably not at the end of the draft. There are a few upside guys just after the top 10 that could make it pretty decent in the end. But yeah, there's only 10 I'm really confident in going into the new season. And that includes Matt Wieters and Yadier Molina, who maybe nobody should be really that confident in given how they're coming back from injuries, and Molina showed signs of decline, but we'll get to that a little later.
What is your overall catcher strategy?
I think whether it's a one catcher league or a two catcher league, I'm probably waiting. It's not one where I see, you know, huge value in striking after Posey or Lucroy just because last year they were so much better than everybody else. I think there is going to be a leveling of the playing field. I think there are some players like Mezzarocco, Darno's another one who we'll probably talk about later, you know, who I think are going to close that gap. So I don't see myself going after the big two, and maybe not even Gattis, who I like a lot this year. So, yeah, I think, you know, I guess I disagree with Scott a little bit because I don't think it's yucky after the top, whatever you said, what's that, five or six?
Ten.
Oh, actually, ten.
Did he say yucky?
Yeah,
he said yucky.
He did. Okay. That's the part I actually got right.
Grody.
He said yucky. But I feel like there's some parity from like about number 5 to 14 or 15.
No, that's probably fair. That's a fair. I think so there is a big drop off after 4.
Yeah, so I'm sorry.
Well, and so I mean I think we're more in agreement than you're letting on, because I think basically those top 4, Posey, Lucroy, Mezzarocco, Gattis, that's how you're going to get an advantage. I wouldn't want to extend myself for that advantage, but if I got it for what I thought was a good value, then I'd be happy to do it. But otherwise, I'm probably just waiting to take, certainly in a one-catcher league, whatever's left, because I think 11 through 14 are the kind of the upside guys I talked about who I think could live up to 5 through 10, but I'm not as trusting in them to do so.
You guys, let's talk about Devin Mesoraco and Evan Gattis, who, Scott, you obviously have lofty things to say about. And Mesoraco, 26 years old, he actually had more fantasy points per plate appearance than Posey and Lucroy last year. But he hit .468 in 13 games in April. He was absolutely torrid and did not hit better than .267 in any other month. He ended up with a .273 batting average. And then Gattis has this pattern last two seasons where he's great before the All-Star break and then pretty horrible after the All-Star break. So I wanted to know what you thought about those two guys. Is there a reason for fantasy owners to think they're not going to be able to produce as well as the preseason expectations?
I think Mesoraco, the strength is more the power than anything else. If he hits .260 with the home runs I expect him to hit, I still think he'll form up to that level. And then Gattis, yeah, it's kind of, we're talking about a two-year sample there where he fell off in the second half both times. Last year, I think it's pretty easy to point to what he was dealing with physically. His back wasn't right. He missed time with a strep throat that I think then became a kidney stone. And so he wasn't quite right there. I'm not going to hold that against him. I do think he overachieved a little in the first half last year, had like a 900 OPS, but I don't think he's as bad as we saw in the second half, and we need to worry about that happening year after year.
All right, then, back to strategy here. You talked about your strategy just waiting in a one-catcher or two-catcher league, but this is something we've talked about. Actually, probably if there's one topic we've talked most about, it's this. The catcher, number two catcher, gets really, really weak pretty quickly after, what, say 15 catchers or so. So in a two-catcher league, I can't wait that long to take my number one or my number two catcher. I think I personally have been prioritizing catcher a lot more in two-catcher drafts than one-catcher drafts.
I think that's a reasonable approach. I think, though, there's going to be enough teams with a bad second catcher that you shouldn't. You wouldn't want to sacrifice too much to make sure you've got two good ones. One good one, definitely, but two is for what you'll have to extend yourself to get that second guy.
Well, okay, in the draft that we did, the roto draft we did a couple weeks ago, I took Brian McCann in round 9, and I took Mike Zunino in round 17, and I would do that any day of the week. I understand Zunino with the walk-to-strikeout ratio seems like he has no value in points leagues, but he's young, could easily get better at batting average, even if it's like .225. And I think he is a solid number two option in roto leagues. And I took him in round 17. So, yeah, you know, I'm fine with that breakdown.
Yeah, I'd be happy walking away with those two as well. I probably would want somebody I trust a little bit more than McCann as the number one guy, but that's just really, really nitpicky for me to even bring that up. The general strategy I like a lot, and I could see using it in just about every two catcher draft that I have this year.
If I could be nitpicky too, though, I think Zunino, a guy who struggles to hit .200, regardless of what the pool is, I see him as more like a round 22, 23 type. In round 17, there's so many good pitchers available that I'd hate to pass it up just to get a 200 hitter.
Yeah, but there are also good pitchers available in round 22. And well, in round 22, you're talking about Jared Saltalamacchia, Robinson Chirinos, Francisco Cervelli, and Kurt Suzuki, who went off the board. And well, to me, there's no question I'd rather have Zunino than those guys.
Do you have the results in front of you? Because I took Ramos as my second catcher.
Yeah, you took him before I took Zunino. You took Wilson Ramos with the first pick of round 14.
Right. So, I will make it a priority to get one of those guys from like 13 to 15 or, whoever's available around that time, whether it's the 17th round, 18th round. I do trust that the pitching is going to be better a couple rounds later than the catching. And you're not just left with Zunino. There could be Montero at that point. There could be Ramos, Russell Martin maybe, even, you know, Norris or Grandal, who I've got outside my top 15, I think I'd rather go with one of those guys than the salty types. And by that, I mean Salt Lamakia.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, so is there that big of a difference between Mike Zunino and Jason Castro? Because they went round 17, round 20. The pitcher comparison, in round 17, you had Michael Pineda go, Jose Quintana, Chris Archer. In round 20, you had Chris Tillman, Henderson Alvarez, Jake Odorizzi.
I don't see a huge drop off there.
I actually see less of a drop off at catcher than a pitcher there.
Well, I don't know. The thing is, you don't seem to think Mike Zunino is capable of hitting better than 200. And look at his minor league numbers. And when he was in the lower levels of the minor leagues, he was hitting 330. And then he had a very brief stint at AAA, hit like crap, and he's been a bad major league hitter in 1.5 years. I get that, but he's still extremely young. He was, what, like the number two overall pick in the MLB draft. So why isn't there room for him to grow? That walk-to-strikeout ratio last year came out of nowhere. It was horrible. It had never been that bad.
It does worry me because it is so bad, and it's been bad at least since that AAA season. I think even AA, that ratio wasn't good, if I remember right. But I agree. There's upside there. I think there's more power upside than what we've already seen. I think there's a little bit of batting average upside. Maybe he'd surprise us and find some more plate discipline. But like you said, I think he could hit 220, 225, and that's not good. But given the power that he could give you, and I think the playing time he's going to amass, which I think is going to be a lot, I do think there's a lot of upside there.
All right. We can come back to that a little bit later. So in a 12-team roto league with a $260 budget, how much should Buster Posey go for?
Well, I've got him at 26, and I couldn't really see him being one of those players that I'm going to go more than like an extra dollar for.
Yeah, Scott, I got him at 23. It's pretty close.
Would you guys ever consider taking two elite catchers, whether you're drafting two elite catchers or bidding on two elite catchers in an auction league? Because obviously in a two-catcher league, would you ever consider going Posey, Mesoraco, Lucroy, Mesoraco, whatever?
I don't see it. It's one thing to have an argument or a discussion about what are you sacrificing in round 17 to get your second catcher, to get a high-quality number two catcher. It's another thing to sacrifice like a round 8 pick or a round 9 pick to get Salvador Perez or somebody like that is your number two catcher. I just think it's completely not worth it.
Here's a example of how quickly things can change at the catcher position. Because last year, who were some of the guys we were excited about? Matt Wieters, Yadier Molina, Willene Rosario, Brian McCann, I would include in that group, Wilson Ramos. And now they're just kind of like these throw-ins we're drafting because we don't want to get Jason Castro, I could say, in that group. They're just kind of guys we're resorting to if we miss out on the ones we really like. So it's just such a demanding position physically, and can have an impact on a player's numbers in a way we don't anticipate, that it's you invest too much of your budget in it, and it's just not a safe investment. It's not.
A few more questions here. How does the position change in AL-only and NL-only league, guys?
I think there's a big difference, and I think Gattis's AL value is pretty huge, because when you do look at the playing time that he stands to have this year, the power he should have playing in Houston, and then you look at the next options in the AL on the board. Perez, where I do worry about a fatigue factor from last year. Wieters would be my number three AL catcher, and who knows what you're going to get from him and how much playing time you're going to get from him this year. I would be much more interested in going after Gattis in an AL league than my top catchers in mixed leagues. I just think the separation there is enormous, whereas in NL, I think there you got Posey and Lucroy, and you got some pretty nice depth just beyond that.
Which catchers, if any, have different value depending on league format, points versus roto or categories? Obviously, Zunino, I made my case for him. Anyone else stand out as different values?
Sure, there's a few. Just starting at the top, I think Lucroy, even though the catcher pool goes deeper in roto leagues, you could draft LaCroix earlier in head-to-head leagues because so much of his value is doubles and he doesn't hit a lot of home runs. Gattis is kind of the opposite way. Roto, because he hits so many home runs, but the downside is a lot of strikeouts, not many walks. And I would put, looking a little further down on this list, Russell Martin in the favorable head-to-head category because he is a high on-base guy who isn't such a sure thing in batting average. That brings down his roto value a good bit. But the thing about him, though, is because since for me he's number 12 catcher for Al, I think he's just a little outside the top 12. You know, he's on the verge of not getting drafted in the one catcher head-to-head format versus the two catcher roto format where he's going to be drafted in every league.
How about Yan Gomes? Do you guys consider him to be better in roto?
I do, yeah, because he's another one that is probably not going to have a very good strikeout to walk ratio.
Right. Our blank, fill in the blank. Ready for fill in the blank?
Love, yeah. Fill in the blank.
All right, let's do it. Blank is my favorite sleeper catcher.
Favorite sleeper catcher. Okay, so to distinguish sleepers from breakouts, I had to go pretty far down the list because there's not many catchers I like that much. So my favorite sleeper catcher is Michael McHenry. How does that sound?
Ooh, all right, tell us why.
Well, because Willene Rosario, the Rockies' intended catcher, they don't seem to like him catching much. For the second straight offseason, they're talking about trying him in outfield and first base, where, of course, they already have good players playing. So what does that mean? It means potentially a trade. They made a point to get Nick Hundley this offseason, so that gives them three catchers on their roster, counting Rosario. But I would think McHenry would get more playing time if Rosario's traded, because I think he has more upside offensively, and he showed it last year in 168 at-bats. He hit .315 with 8 home runs. That's not the first time he showed 20 homer potential. He had 12 home runs and 240 at-bats for the Pittsburgh Pirates a couple years ago. So pretty good on-base guy, pretty good power guy. He comes into regular at-bats in Colorado. He's going to matter in fantasy.
Al?
Yeah, I like Wilson Ramos a lot because I don't think many people are going to see him as a number one catcher. I won't need to draft him as such, but I do love the power. We didn't see as much of it last year, but he was dealing with a broken hand and recovering from that for part of the season. We saw the power increase a little bit later in the season. So, I like his potential to really outperform where he's likely to go in drafts and auctions.
Yeah, he's 27 years old, and in 2013, he had 16 homers in 78 games. He slugged .470. And in 2014, last year, he hit 6 home runs in August. Looked like he was getting his power back toward the end of the year. That's Wilson Ramos. All right, blank is my favorite breakout catcher. All right, Scott, make the distinction.
Oh, man, favorite. Well, I'm pretty sure you're going to say Darnell, right?
Right.
So I have two. Darno's one. I'll go with the other one just so we can talk about different players. And that's Yasmani Grandal of the now Dodgers, actually. And part of my enthusiasm about him is just how much enthusiasm new Dodgers GM, or actually president of baseball operations.
Yeah, get it right.
Has. Grandal was the main player he got back for Matt Kemp. And we all know how good Matt Kemp is. So that, I think, says something, as well as the fact that Grandal, remember at the beginning of last year, he wasn't quite playing every day, was still coming back from ACL surgery. They were easing him in. It took him a while to get right. But then at the end of the season, he started to show that potential that made him such a big prospect in the beginning, that he showed it the very first year of his career before the PED suspension and the torn ACL. He hit .283 with 5 home runs and an .883 OPS over his final 106 at-bats. Always had worse splits at home in San Diego, like a lot of Padres, versus on the road. So now he's out of that environment, Dodger Stadium. It's not a hitter's park, but it's a lot closer to neutral than Petco Park is. So I think between the improved health, capitalizing on the pedigree, kind of the way Devin Masaroko did last year, actually, though his playing time issue was less about health than just about opportunity. I think Grandal is poised for a, a breakout here in a new environment.
Travis d'Arnaud was demoted to the minors fairly early in the season, not for too long, and after the demotion in 69 games, d'Arnaud hit .272 with 10 home runs and 32 RBI. He's 26 years old, and he is at a breakout for Scott and Al. Al, you can talk about Travis d'Arnaud.
Yeah, well, you know, you made one of the main points that I would use to support pursuing him as a breakout, which is that once he came back from that demotion, he was the kind of hitter that we had hoped he would be when he first came up in 2013. So in a sense, I think the breakout's happened, but I think he can sustain that over a full season. So that's really a truer breakout, and that's what I expect from him. And I imagine I'll look to him as my main number one catching target, because I think he'll just be a lot more affordable than, you know, the Posies and the Gattises up at the top of the rankings. Potentially there's not that much of a drop-off in production.
And Blank will be a bust in 2015.
All right. Well, I want to qualify this because I'm going to fill in the blank with Yan Gomes. But, look, I like him, and I'd be happy to get him if I didn't have to pay too much for him. But I just get the idea from, you know, things that I read and hear people say about Gomes that they see him as kind of a sneaky sleeper type, and I think he could be overdrafted. I'm not buying into the high BABIPs in the last 2 years, which have been a part of what's boosted his value. I think the power's legitimate. I don't question that at all. But I think there's a cluster of catchers who are sort of borderline number one, number two types who can give you power, but aren't going to do that much for you in batting average and on base. And that's actually who I think Gomes will be this year.
Gomes or Salvador Perez?
Perez.
Scott?
Am I choosing between them?
Yes. No, you can have them both. Lucky man.
No, I'm actually taking Gomes, I think. I think the second year was validation of the first.
All right. Gomes or Brian McCann?
Gomes.
I'll go Gomes.
Travis d'Arnaud or Brian McCann?
I'm taking d'Arnaud.
Me too.
Yep.
Travis d'Arnaud or Salvador Perez?
Salvador Perez for me.
I have Perez ranked higher, but that said, I think I'm always going to be just waiting it out to get d'Arnaud.
Scott, who's your potential bust this year?
I'm going to go with Yadier Molina because I think a lot of people point to I think it was a torn ligament in his thumb that cost him significant time in the middle of last season. And yeah, he wasn't so good coming back from that. But that happened in mid-July, pretty much right before the All-Star break. He was slugging .409 at that point. This is a guy who the previous 3 years slugged well over .450. I can find the exact number. It was .481 the previous 3 years, and he was down to .409. So he was already showing signs there that maybe he was declining here in his early 30s, a guy who's been a full-time catcher pretty much since age 22, got a lot of innings on those legs. I think he'll still make a lot of contact, but will he drive the ball as well as he had been doing in recent years enough to be an elite catcher? No. And I think because he's such a big name and there's so little else out there, people are still going to draft him. Maybe not quite as high as they had in previous years, but too high. A middle round type, and I just don't think that's who he is anymore.
You know who else is 32 years old, Scott?
Who is that?
It's not you. It's not me.
No, we're getting there, though.
It's not me either.
It's not Al. Russell Martin, and I don't know where he's going to go this year because he had that amazing OBP last year. He was the number 7 catcher in fantasy baseball, and now he's with Toronto. But he'll be 32 later this month. He's technically still 31. But I'm not at all interested in him. I guess if I had to pick a bust, it might be Russell Martin, but I feel like people won't really draft him in the top 12 anyway. What do you guys think about Martin this year? Going to the Blue Jays, if I were going to make a case for him, it's that the power could come back. Martin hit 26 combined home runs in 2 years with Pittsburgh, but 17 came on the road, and he hit 18 and 21 home runs in the 2 seasons before that when he was with the Yankees. So if he still is capable of hitting with power, the numbers might come back up now that he's a Blue Jay and not a Pirate.
Yeah, no, he's a tough one to figure out, and I suspect that he's the kind of hitter that is smart enough and skilled enough that he adapts his game to wherever he is, because we saw with the Yankees, he was never really a huge power guy with the Dodgers. and then he was sort of a power only guy with the Yankees.
I don't know that that's like I have a theory for Martin that he got kind of home run happy with the Yankees because he was a much better player with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Even if he wasn't threatening to hit 25 home runs, and he kind of got back to being that player last year. So, you know, I'm hoping he's matured from that stint, and it's kind of just a theory, so I don't even know that that's what happened. Just it looks like the batted ball trends kind of support that theory. It might be a situation where if everybody did seem to be buying into last year completely, I'd be afraid to draft him too, but since they're not, I have him as my 12th catcher, and I'd be okay with him if I ended up with him in a starter in a head-to-head league because I was the last person to draft a catcher.
Well, Martin went 13th overall at the catcher position in the roto draft that we did a couple weeks ago. Let's break that down. I'm going to read off some names and some rounds. You tell me good value, bad value. You can talk about these players if you're worried about anybody, if you're encouraged by anybody. The floor is yours. Roto draft breakdown. Buster Posey went in the fourth round. It's a two-catcher league, 12 teams. Posey in the fourth, Gattis in the fifth, Lucroy in the sixth, Mesoraco in the sixth. Let's stop there. Posey fourth, Gattis fifth round, Lucroy sixth round, Mesoraco sixth.
I really have no issue with any of that. I mean, that owner is probably never going to be me, you know, just because of how I prioritize the position. But I think that is fair value for each of those four catchers.
Mesoraco at six in the sixth round was me. But I think, you know, a tier. When we're talking about a tier, the idea is you should be willing to draft all on the same level. So you know, I'd rather be the guy who takes Mesoraco in round six than Posey in round four.
Gotcha. Salvador Perez in round seven, Brian McCann in round nine, Yan Gomes with the last pick of round 10. Salvador Perez in round seven, McCann in round nine, Yan Gomes round 10.
Well, I mean, the only one I really like in terms of the order here is Perez. I feel like that was a little bit of a reach for McCann. And again, this is sort of what I was talking about with Gomes. I expect this is where he's going to go, but I think you could wait on him. But I think that there should be more separation. In fact, I think it was the last podcast, Adam, where you said sometimes we see somebody sort of panic and take the next player in the queue. I feel like that's what happened here with Perez, that he's not just one round worse catcher than Mesoraco.
But why not? Isn't he still – I know he had a down year with the batting average, Salvador Perez, but still young, 25 years old in May. And I thought he was a pretty sure bet to hit around 300. He hit 260 last year. So do you consider him a 300 hitter anymore?
No, I think he'll, I think the batting average should rebound. No, I do think he has that potential. And there's always been this sort of untapped power potential with Perez. So it's just a question of risk with him. Will we see that power batting average combination from him? And is it possible we will see maybe even some decline after catching an insane number of innings last year?
I think going back to Gomes in round 10, I actually thought that was good value. That probably demonstrates the difference there in our opinions. I remember... He was still there in round 10, and I was like, man, I wish I hadn't taken Mesoraco so I could draft Gomes here. I didn't want to get two catchers that early.
I took McCann in round 9, middle of round 9. In retrospect, I should have taken Gomes over McCann. But I do want to point out that Brian McCann was the number 5 catcher in fantasy last year in both points leagues and roto leagues, and I don't see any reason why he can't repeat his numbers. 232 with 23 home runs. I think 19 of them came at home. That's who he is. He's a good home hitter and a terrible road hitter. And he got off to we talked about it on a previous podcast. He did get off to somewhat of a slow start. He had 8 home runs in September, played a little bit of first base, played 14 games at DH. I think McCann's actually fairly safe. Taking him in round 9 didn't seem like a reach to me. But I should have taken Gomes over him, I'd say. All right, some catchers flew off the board in round 11. Yadier Molina, Matt Wieters, and Travis d'Arnaud. Yadier Molina, Matt Wieters, Travis d'Arnaud. They all went round 11.
Well, and again, this illustrates why I like d'Arnaud, because Wieters may be as good or better, but he's, I think, a ton more risky. And there's Scott's bust, Molina, right there in the same group. And I think there's risk with Yadier Molina, too. So not a bad place to take any of the three, but I think d'Arnaud's upside is so much greater.
Well, let's talk about Matt Wieters. So he's coming off Tommy John surgery. He only played 26 games, but he hit 308 with 5 home runs, and it looked like he was having, finally, that breakout year after being just sort of that very consistent, maybe top 6, top 7 catcher, but never elite. He was finally breaking out, and then maybe. And then he had Tommy John surgery. So what's the risk with Wheater? Is it health, or is it that the sample size was so small and we don't know who he really is?
Well, for where he's going, if he gets back to where he was before last year,
right,
which is a very small sample, but then, you know, he's fine there. So it's really about health, and I think they're still hopeful he's going to be ready to go for opening day, but Tommy John surgery, that's pretty aggressive even for a hitter. It doesn't take hitters nearly as long to come back, but particularly for a catcher who relies so much on arm strength, that's enough of a concern there about him missing some time at the beginning of the season that I'd be a little reluctant to take him this early. But, you know, at the same time, that whole wrinkle about how, what was it, 26 games?
Yeah.
I know at the time he got injured last year that I was talking about, hey, maybe this is a breakout season because he changed his stance from the left side of the plate, and that was always the side that gave him trouble being a switch hitter. So I'm not totally dismissing that possibility. It just seems like of all the factors to consider with Wheaters, it's pretty low on the totem pole.
Okay, we have 10 catchers off the board so far, so let's get to the back end of the top 12 and the backups. Willian Rosario goes in the 12th round. Miguel Montero in the 13th round. Russell Martin in the 13th round. And then Wilson Ramos with the first pick of the 14th round to Al. So Willian Rosario in the 12th, Montero and Martin in the 13th, Wilson Ramos in the 14th.
And I like this as a spot to take a chance on both Rosario and Montero. Because Montero, I mean, the last 2 years, 1.5 of those years have been pretty awful. But there was the half season where he looked like the Montero from before then. And I think he still could be that guy. And Rosario, as Scott pointed out, there's playing time concerns for him. There's some plate discipline issues with him. But especially if he stays in Colorado, I think there's incredible power potential that we haven't really truly seen the entirety of. So I think this is not a bad place to take a risk that those guys are going to be what they're capable of being.
Just in 2013, not too long ago, Rosario was the number 2 catcher in Roto, number 6 in points. What order would you guys put it in, though? So it goes Rosario, Montero, Russell Martin, Wilson Ramos. Which order would you put it in?
I have them Rosario, Martin, Montero, and Ramos. With a couple players in between, actually.
I've like got Grandal.
Grandal and Derek Norris are before Montero and Ramos for me.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, I've got Montero, Rosario, Ramos, Martin in that order.
Ramos. I heard that.
Ramos.
All right, next up, Yasmani Grandal in the 15th, Mike Zunino in the 17th, and Derek Norris in the 18th. So how about we talk about Derek Norris, who had an interesting year. In May, he'll turn 26, so he's still young. Over his last 98 games, pretty big group of games there for Derek Norris, .241 with 6 home runs and a .352 slugging percentage. So he was good for a very brief time, and then he was pretty bad. What do you guys think about Derek Norris?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you asked me this time at the All-Star break last year, it'd be more favorable than it is now. But there, in the underlying stats, there is a lot of good he did at the age of 25. And in the second half, when he showed like his very first signs of slowing down, they started messing with his playing time enough that you have to figure that probably played into the late season decline some. He gets on base a lot. He makes not like Yadier Molina type contact, but good, consistent contact. And he has some power potential. And there's not going to be nearly as much competition for at-bats in San Diego. So I could see. I actually have a, you know, in lowercase letters breakout next to his name, too. Not nearly as high on him as Darno and Grandal, but I could see it happening.
So with Norris, it's more like breakout.
Yeah, it's a whisper. Exactly.
All right, we got some more catchers to go through here. The final group of catchers taken in this roto draft. These are all backup these are all number two catchers. Deonna Navarro, Jason Castro, John Jaso, Jared Saltalamacchia, Robinson Chirinos, Francisco Cervelli, and Kurt Suzuki. Deonna Navarro, Jason Castro, John Jaso, Jared Saltalamacchia, Robinson Chirinos, Francisco Cervelli, and Kurt Suzuki. Any names interest you there in that group?
The two that stand out the most for me are Jason Castro and John Jaso. Castro, just because maybe he can bounce back to what he did 2 years ago, hit for a little more power and more a higher average. Jaso looks like he's going to be primarily the DH in Tampa Bay, so there's more playing time there. In points leagues, there could be a very high OBP working for him. So I think there's value there, and the rest really don't interest me that much. I mean, I think they're all viable as your number two catcher, but they're really last resorts. I mean, I'd throw in a name that I assume then went undrafted, Rene Rivera. You know, I like him about as much as any of those guys, and I could probably maybe pull out another name or two that were undrafted. So you could pass up on any of them as far as I'm concerned and get somebody else.
Here's an email from Matt from Wisconsin. Can Yasmeel Pinto take over for Kurt Suzuki in Minnesota?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think Kurt Suzuki's as good as he showed last year, and I think he basically showed it in the second half of last year. But he's so much better than Pinto defensively, and there's reason to believe the Padres don't even think of Pinto as being a catcher anymore.
Or the Twins.
The team he's actually on. But if there was some kind of opportunity for Pinto to get at bats in Minnesota, I would like him a lot as a sleeper, because good power, good on-base ability. He just seems more like a DH type, and they already have one of those up and look great down the stretch, Kenneth Vargas. So I'm not sure that there's really any opportunity for Pinto there.
Do you have any more sleepers, breakouts, or busts that you would like to talk about?
Yes, I have a couple.
Okay.
Kind of on the deeper end of sleepers, like Michael McHenry, is Pete O'Brien, who isn't in the majors yet, but he hit over 30 home runs in the minors last year. The Diamondbacks' projected starting catcher is Tuffy Goswich, and their general manager, Dave Stewart, has basically said he's given up trying to find a better catcher. They'll just wait until O'Brien's ready. So it seems like there's going to be a clear path for him midseason. And he has play discipline issues, but a lot of power potential, too. So at a weak position, he's worth noting there.
Do you know where he went to college, Scott?
Pete O'Brien?
Yeah.
Cornell. I have no idea.
No, you look it up. Look it up.
Okay. And then this is kind of going off list for this sleeper, because he's not eligible at catcher right now, but that's probably the position he's going to play most this year, is John Jaso, who started out as a catcher for the A's last year, but then had a foot issue that kept him from going behind the plate. They liked his bat enough to play him at first base in the outfield, though, and he's kind of like what I was saying Pinto was, good on base ability, pretty good pop. But he's actually going to play catcher. So particularly in two catcher leagues, if you don't mind drafting him to fill first base, that's kind of the hard part of drafting him, is that's the only place he's eligible right now.
Scott, how do you
not...
It'd
be a pretty nice find for you.
How do you not think...
Did I say John Jaso.
Who are you talking about?
I was not talking about John Jaso. I was talking about Stephen Vogt.
Okay.
Sorry, I wrote down Jaso. It was actually Stephen Vogt. I'm glad I got a chance to clarify that.
All those Oakland catchers were all the same.
Yeah, no, John Jaso is actually probably not going to catch, but he's starting out at catcher. Vogt, first base only, but he's the one with the power and on-base ability. He's the one I think you should draft as a sleeper, and I'm just going to stop talking now.
Yeah, well, no, Scott, how did you not guess University of Miami when I asked you about Pete O'Brien? Like, how obvious was that?
I forgot who I was talking to.
I didn't, but I didn't remember him going to the U. So I thought
I was making the U sign in the Skype window.
I thought you had to play paper football.
All right, Scott, Al, sleepers, breakouts, and or busts.
Honestly, I think I've really thrown out the names of all the guys that fit that for me.
Okay.
I sort of offhandedly mentioned Rivera, who I do like as sort of the last resort number two fallback guy for me. But
well, then I'll ask you a different question. How about AL only or NL only? Deeper formats. Who are some guys to target?
Yeah, I'm not sure if anybody knew there because I like Rivera and AL. I like O'Brien that's got mentioned in NL.
What about Robinson Chirinos?
Yeah, he was drafted. He was drafted in the 23rd round.
Of our mixed league draft?
Yes.
Well, that's kind of silly.
Well,
he's going to get at bats. He's going to hit double-digit home runs, probably. That's about the most I could say for him.
Okay.
You know, maybe in a now only league, a late flyer on Christian Betancourt, who's reputed as a all glove, no hit kind of catcher. But in Roto, there could be some batting average upside there.
You just won someone a league, Al. Good job. We'll do first base and mailbag later on in the week. Dates to be determined. Scott White, thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
Al Melchior, thank you.
Ah, glad I'm included.
The answer is always Miami. I'm Adam Azer, and we'll talk to you later in the week. See you later.